Hello. Welcome, listeners and market participants, to KBRA's European Credit Podcast, Conversations in European Credit. I am Gordon Kerr, Head of European Research at KBRA, and today we have a special podcast with Ken Egan from our Sovereigns team.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me, Gordon. Looking forward to the discussion.
Listeners, the aim of this podcast is a bit different to our usual conversations in European Credit. We would like to engage in a discussion with all of you on a prevailing topic in the market. The topic will provide you with an economics focus. Consider it an economics special, where we will cover a more macro topic to our usual conversations and provide you with KBRA's thoughts on the current state of events, where we are potentially heading and why. So sit back and enjoy, or if you are feeling up to it, reach out afterwards and keep the conversation going. Right, let's get to it. Ken, how are you this morning? I understand you were in the US last week. How did that go?
Yeah, I was in Washington last week. It was great. Some interesting meetings, a very interesting time for the US, I guess, in an election year, lots to watch, especially with regard to policy. We had the president's budget released last week also. And I guess everybody will have one eye on the Fed this week, right? The US economy growing nicely, especially given that recent jobs data. Did you see that? I mean, you know, when you consider this type of environment, what about you? I believe you were speaking at an event in London last week. Anything interesting?
Yeah, it was a panel that was part of Global Capital Live event. We discussed specifically the UK securitization market, covering topics from the current state of the market to where it's heading. Overall, people were constructive on where the market stands and are positive on the current direction. However, it remains a market slow to see a return to prime collateral issuers. Anyway, that is a more detailed topic. If people want to learn more, they can go online and check out the transcript of the panel. Did you see the CPI numbers out this morning? Listeners, just as an aside, we are recording this on Monday, March 18th, when the Eurozone inflation numbers for February were announced. Bit of a surprise, given they remain relatively stable, or is this maybe a sign that we are finally starting to see rates bite?
Yeah, I did see that pretty much as expected. I think it's a bit of both, you know, sticky downwards, but rates also having an impact. In particular, notice the services side is starting to see a slowing rate. And this is now what many central bankers have been focusing on.
Okay, the timing of this news is actually perfect for our topic at hand today, interest rates. They have been a major area of focus lately. Well, they have been a major area of focus actually for the past 2 years, but the focus now is on where they go from here. And it's not evidently clear yet. For example, the market's view for rates has changed even since the start of the year.
Yeah, for sure, Gordon. You know, things have shifted, but to be honest, maybe it's just more the market is finally willing to listen to what central bank policymakers have been saying for months and months. I think they've been hesitant to move too quickly with cuts this year. And initially, the market, you know, given its dislike for high rates, didn't want to listen or got overly enthusiastic about the potential for things to happen sooner than stated. And since the start of the year, we've seen a gentle rollback in terms of market expectations for timing and even central bankers' views of timing.
Yes, the markets did get overly enthusiastic for rate cuts. At the start of the year, markets were really pricing in the first European rate cut inside of the first quarter and the Bank of England rate cut in the second quarter. Now we are nearing the end of the first quarter and they are pricing in the first rate cut in the second quarter for Europe and the third quarter for the UK. But of course, timing can be difficult in this environment. And what is the market really telling us at the moment?
Yeah, it's exactly as you say. The market consensus, according to Bloomberg probability indicators at least, illustrates that market expectations for the first cut from the ECB or the BOE have been pushed back a quarter. I think the timing of the first Fed cut will be interesting, especially, you know, as a guiding light for the other two main central banks in this environment. And remember, the US economy, which the Fed oversees employing a dual mandate, is outperforming expectations, you could say. So as you say, you know, timing is tricky for sure. The euro area by the end of the year, market consensus on Bloomberg is that the ECB deposit facility rate will be 1% lower. So a cut of around 1% in total by the end of the year. Similarly, in the UK, the same Bloomberg data is indicating the BOE rate could be 75 basis points lower than where it is now.
We are starting to see signs of growth struggling in some regions. For example, the PMIs out of Germany and France recently are showing indications of slowing activity. Also, inflation has come down with the, as we highlighted, the latest European data showing 2.6% for the Eurozone and the UK, which by the time this is released would have come out. But the market expectations are for around 3.5%. So what are central banks considering? Could these expectations shift again?
Yeah, I think, you know, as policymakers are suggesting, this is very fluid and data dependent. You know, I think there's a few things. Firstly, inflation has broadly been stickier than anticipated. You know, if you look at France or Spain, where inflation was typically running lower than the euro area all through the recent inflationary bout last year and the year before, now inflation levels are proving quite sticky there. We're seeing services inflation as being the hardest to tackle. You know, so there was this initial pass-through from energy whereby the initial spike eventually fed through to transportation, products, industry in general, and now services, for example, through wages. So while goods inflation has fallen back, services inflation remains elevated. And this is especially evident in the UK, where services are a large part of the economy. Labour markets remain tight too in the UK and a number of other markets also. So overall, where we are is basically that goods, food, energy price growth is now lower on decreasing volatility and base effects, but some pressures remain. And I could talk about them in a minute, but other inflationary pressures are strong. Wages, as we said, you know, wage growth is running at around 4.5% in the euro area, so well above the ECB's supposed comfort level of 3% wage growth, and even higher again in the UK. So, you know, market expectations for inflation, you know, things like the five-year have fallen back a bit in the euro area. So that'll offer some comfort to doves. But this, again, is much higher in the UK, around 3.4%. So market participants still anticipate inflation above target in the economy. You know, geopolitical tensions are high too. Attacks on shipping in the Red Sea, for example. Obviously, the war in Ukraine continues. These put risks to the upside for inflation. You know, furthermore, there are big elections this year as well in the US and the UK, for example, which maybe create a cause for hesitancy. Just to counter all this slightly, rates are quite elevated in the UK and the euro area compared to, say, the last, you know, 15 or 20 years, and they rose quite sharply and suddenly. So they do take time to have an impact, and we are only really now seeing those lagged effects on growth and investment. And then added to this, there is a cyclical dampening effect on inflation from tighter fiscal stances by governments, you know, following years of support measures to prop up economies.
That all sounds very complicated to get right.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. It is tricky. And there are many different views out there in this type of environment. I guess specifically on inflation, there was a good piece by the IMF last September. I'm not sure if you've seen it, which looked at over 100 different inflationary shocks in 56 countries since the 70s. And it just highlights how long it typically takes to resolve inflationary spells, you know, sort of 3 to 5 years. So in a roundabout way, urging central banks not to act too hastily or claim success just yet. I mean, you know, the head of the Bank for International Settlements said the same thing only yesterday in Frankfurt.
Okay, so we know that cuts are coming and we have our new expected timeline, but where does this leave us in terms of rates maybe 2 or 3 years down the line?
Again, using current market curves, I think when we look further out, you can see sort of where the higher for longer narrative comes from, especially relative to where we've come from in recent years of low rates. The Euribor curve is still 2.5% out to 2029, for example. Or if you look at OIS curves, you know, the 5-year 1 month is around 2.3% in the euro area and 3.4% in the UK. The implied probability rate of the Bank of England after 3 years is around 3.6%.
Arguably, this is one of the most highly telegraphed slowdowns in history, which did allow some people to prepare for the turn in interest rates. However, not everyone is able to adjust to the rise in inflation and rates. Can you explain in a bit more detail, you know, what's going on?
Certainly in terms of mortgage or corporate loan resets, you can imagine everyone will eventually be hit by rate rises in comparison to prior to 2022. This will have an impact and is having an impact, but it does not appear to be as severe as some initially expected because some households have built up buffers from COVID largesse as well as change their behaviors in some cases, which can give a boost to disposable income. There's also been a noticeable deleveraging in private and corporate debt in many economies in recent years. I think that's key to highlight just as an aside. What we do see as having an influence on these longer term rates are the longer term pressures such as demographics. This is influencing already tight labor market supply and therefore underpinning wage pressure. When we talk about wage pressure, it's more of a long-term pass-through, right? Households eventually get wealthier and then consumption lifts, but it may not be immediate. There's also, you know, renewed push behind public investment in Europe supporting growth. Governments are spending on the energy transition to support climate goals and think to the wider EU recovery and resilience spending. This does create an inflationary impulse there. So finally, yes, energy prices have stabilized and volatility is low, but they've settled at structurally higher levels than pre-pandemic. So that input cost for energy will still be higher over the medium term.
Interesting. On your point about government spending, I mean, can they really afford this? There's a lot of discussion in the last several months about this challenge as we face upcoming elections that will challenge what parties can promise and deliver on. Plus, won't higher interest rates across the curve have an impact on their budgets?
Okay, well, on affordability, this is really country dependent. But a lot of the support for transition spending is coming from a European Union level, which spreads out the exposure. But in terms of the sovereign angle on this, I'm not sure how material these higher rates will be for certain euro area sovereigns, you know, mainly Italy, Portugal, and Greece, for example, who currently borrow more cheaply, you know, than they did during the debt crisis period, for example. So it's all relative. Like in the case of Portugal, the 10-year was issuing nearly 200 basis points higher than in Q1 2014 than where it is now. Years before that, it was higher again. So a lot of the curves are still refinancing at much lower rates. This means that the average cost of debt outstanding is stable and contained for this group of sovereigns. So it's a crucial point. You know, the Italian Treasury conducted a study on its own interest rate sensitivity and say that a 100 basis points shift in rates results in interest expenditure in terms of GDP shifting by less than 0.5% after 3 years. So it's really contained and manageable, and it's a slow moving thing, is my point.
If I may just play devil's advocate here for a moment, there's an argument that we could potentially return to the pre-pandemic weak inflation, low growth environment that we had prior to the supply shock that we experienced as a result of the pandemic. So looking at, for example, Italian inflation readings of less than 1% wouldn't exactly fill me with confidence. And China entered into the deflationary scenario. Other European countries have also had severe drops, with the Netherlands even touching negative CPI in 1 month. So there could arguably be a concern that inflation really dissipates and growth stagnates, and we need serious cuts to rates for stimulation in the future.
Yeah, for sure. I don't disagree with that. It's a legitimate potential in the broad spectrum of future scenarios. However, it's not what markets are suggesting at the moment. As we noted earlier, looking at the Bloomberg probabilities and some curves, there are still restrictive rates expected for years to come, you know, relative to their past. But I guess we can quickly see how these things change these days. Just going back to your point, what that would demonstrate, though, is that rates, you know, are having an impact on European markets. And if that is the case, there would be some signs of deeper underlying weakness, of which there are some pockets, such as increased insolvencies, you know, et cetera. But maybe turning it back to you, Gord, you know, I mean, in terms of mortgages and corporates, maybe this is more near term, but how do you see those faring in this interest rate environment?
Yeah, Ken, you know, in our outlook, we highlighted that this year could be one of turbulence, and there are signs emerging of delinquencies and defaults increasing. Currently, these are more of a case of rising from historical lows and returning to historical trends. However, if some of the scenarios discussed above continue to play out, there is the potential for further increases in these metrics going forward. Anyway, if you want to read more on that topic, you can go to our website, kbra.com, and have a read of our views. Thank you very much, Ken. This has been a very interesting discussion.
Yeah, no problem, Gordon. Thanks. I hope everyone listening found it interesting, and I look forward to sitting down with you again soon.
That's it from us today. As always, we hope these conversations in credit help to illuminate the many trends taking shape across the markets. For more in-depth coverage of the themes discussed today, or to learn more about our unique approach to credit, sign up to the KBRA website to read all our research. Have a topic idea or comment you'd like to share? Reach out to me or one of the analysts on today's episode. Be sure to rate, share, like, and subscribe to this podcast so you can be notified when new content is available. Invite your colleagues as well. We'd love to count you all as informed listeners. This is Gordon Kerr thanking you for being part of the conversation. Take care, everyone.